Welcome to the Industrialised Podcast, where we speak to those leading the charge towards the future of construction. In this episode, host Darren Richards, Director of Cogent Consulting, is in conversation with Tim Carey, Head of Design at Mace Construct. Tim explains how Mace's construction to production strategy is pushing the sector beyond materials and factories towards genuine systems approach. They cover why most contractors won't share their productivity numbers, the pre-construction gains most of the industry are missing, and where generative AI actually earns its place in design and delivery. Let's find out more as we hand over to Darren.
Welcome to the Industrialised Podcast, where today I'm joined by Tim Carey from Mace Construct. Hi, Tim.
Hi, nice to meet you. Thanks for your time.
Please tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do as Head of Design.
Okay, so I've been with Mace Construct since 2023. Before that, I spent a long time with other Tier 1 contractors. My role, I suppose it's a bit misappropriately titled, actually, because we don't really design anything. What we do is we design manage. So we manage the output of others, external consultants, and that's quite an important differentiator, which we might circle back on a bit later. But effectively, across the portfolio of projects that Mace delivers every single year, I have overall responsibility for making sure that they're designed to the right standard of design. I also pick up things like the Building Safety Act and how we respond to construction to production, which is our flavour on the MMC and industrialised construction landscape.
And that's a very broad portfolio of sectors, I presume, from MOD at one end, is it, to commercial offices at the other? And
yeah, we go from... I'd say historically, or in recent history, we've not really delivered the programmes of works. And there's a reason for that in terms of on a lot of the programmes of work, like New Hospitals Programme, Mace Consult, as they are, or Mace as it was before the demerger, were often client-side on those programmes of work. So often Mace Construct were conflicted out of those. Now, as you would have seen in the press, Mace Consult have been sold off or acquired and by Goldman Sachs. So we've demerged. Now, hopefully, from a Mace Construct perspective, what that will do is open up the opportunity for those programmes of work. But our current portfolio can span anything from most of the new build and commercial buildings going up in the city to work at Heathrow and Gatwick and HS2 to any myriad of life sciences buildings, data centres, the whole range, really.
Great. Okay, good. Interesting stuff. So I want to talk about this construction to production philosophy, this phrase. I think it's a great term, by the way. And just try and maybe tease out what it actually changes in an operating model or a design philosophy or what it influences. Clearly, it's a broad spectrum of activity. But my understanding of your philosophy here is about maximising the potential for off-site delivery, advancing digital design, etc. But give us your real kind of a description of what construction to production means to Mace.
Yeah, it's probably exactly as you just spelled out. And I suppose it's probably industrialised construction before that term came into the latest fashion. And for me, it was one of the things that attracted me to Mace. So in a past life, when I'd been at Wilmer Dixon, one of the things that I'd advocated was, you know, modern ways of doing things and not just MMC. It's a vital component part, but it's also digital integration. And then ultimately, it's about the quality of the end product you deliver from a sustainability point. So Mace's innovation strategy, which dates back to 2022 from memory, maybe 2023, it's called Speed and Scale, and it's still very valid for me, hence why we've not updated it. And it's effectively got those three pillars: low carbon delivery, digitalized construction and processes, and the use of offsite manufacturing to deliver more productively and a better product. So I suppose to kind of expand upon that point, one of the other things that attracted me to it was the fact that C2P model is really kind of founded on an integrator approach. So we don't, we did in the past, but we don't currently own any manufacturing facilities. And I think that's actually a good thing, because I think sometimes if you do own your own factory, you could be prejudiced in your way of thinking to think that that necessarily is the answer. And if you go back to that spectrum or that portfolio of projects that Mace delivers every single year, there's no one factory that would be able to deliver the volume, all the variance in output that we would need to be able to deliver against those things. So really our strategy is about, from an offsite manufacturing point of view, is about finding suppliers and solutions that sit across all seven categories of the MMC definition framework and using those either in isolation or in combination to meet the specifics of a particular project.
Yeah, so you can be agnostic to the material type and the form, whether it's volumetric or hybrid or panelized.
Exactly, yeah. And one of the things that we've developed an online digital library, which we've got about 100 different solutions. So the online library hosts information about each of those, whether it's technical information, links to manufacturers, lessons learned, importantly, so that we incrementally improve on those delivery. And then we align that to a supporting online decision matrix. So every time an opportunity comes in the door, we ask our project teams with support from some of us centrally to register the project. And that includes the type of asset that it wants to deliver. And then based on the specifics of the asset type, whether it's a medium-rise commercial building, a data centre, so on and so forth, the decision matrix, back of house, the algorithm will look across those 100 or so C2P solutions and it will make recommendations that fit, that we think will provide the best value. As we then go through developing our build strategy, we'll rule some in, or reconfirm them, we'll rule some out. And we might then choose to trial a technology. But it's all based with value in mind.
And is that taking you towards a platform-based approach, repeatable, standardised solutions?
Yes and no. So I'd say repeatable platforms of components, but maybe not as far as in past lives I've gone where you've got fully repeatable building designs, although we are kind of exploring that in the data centre market. But again, because we currently don't do programmes of works, the opportunity is probably slightly more restricted than it would otherwise be to explore that. And I'll go back to the kind of the initial point I made is we don't design. So often a typical project from my experience that we will inherit will be a two-stage process for procurement, although we do have others, but generally a two-stage process for procurement, and we will generally inherit a stage three set of information. So many of the options that don't sit on category 1 to 7. So for example, standardized grids and just making design efficiencies be baked in, sometimes that moment may have passed.
So I think what you're saying is we're still designing buildings first and then asking how do we industrialize them afterwards?
Often that's the case. Yeah. Obviously, wherever we can get involved. So we are starting, as I say, on things like data centers, we're starting to get involved at REBA 0, REBA 1. That gives us a real opportunity to bake those efficiencies in from the off.
And do you find yourself working with repeat architects where they get to understand the way you want to deliver, so they reflect that in their designs, or is it often an architect might be novated, they've been working with a client for months ahead of you?
More often than not, it does depend on the sector, but more often than not, they tend to be novated. So they'll sit client side until end of PCSA or main contract execution, then be novated over to us. So it's more of a kind of influencing and thought leadership role to, we can learn as much from them sometimes as they can from us, but it's more just pointing them in the direction and giving them the tools and the evidence to be able to consider it when they go through design.
But the successful delivery of industrialised construction and your kind of C2P philosophy is around getting the brief right, to get the design right, to coordinate it right and plan it right, isn't it?
Exactly that. It's about use the right solutions at the right time on the right projects.
Yeah.
And don't shoehorn in MMC or offsite manufacturing just for the sake of it. Because we've done that time, not we, but as an industry, we've done that time and time again. We don't reap the benefits. Quite the opposite. It costs money and then it gives it a bad name.
And on the topic of benefits, if the benefits are visible, why does industrialised construction still struggle to scale? You know, because you and I are kind of preaching to the converted here. You know, we're talking to us each other. We know this is the future of construction, but often it's difficult to articulate the benefits to get people to really buy into it. Do you know why that is?
It's an interesting point, isn't it? I mean, we've just commissioned, or we're just about to publish a report called Build Smart, Build Better, which is a kind of first step as a tangible evidence of what will be Mace's public commitment to driving the productivity agenda. You know, ultimately, we want to make sure that, you know, we're aiming to become the most productive construction firm in the UK by 2030. Part of that report looked at a number of areas. We undertook 25 interviews with key clients. So whether that's the likes of Heathrow, AstraZeneca, Scape, UCL, Mitsubishi, etc. More importantly, we looked across 234 of projects that we delivered over the last 7 years and really pulled the data apart to see, well, you know, where does it drive? And it does show a correlation between, you know, the more pre-manufactured value you do, you know, I speak to Mark Farmer regularly on this, but the more pre-manufactured value you do, the greater productivity you get. But again, that goes back to driving the most appropriate PMV into the project to drive the productivity. Why do I think it's not scaled across the industry? Generally, I think because people don't like to share their data. We are making a commitment as part of this report to share our data and to be transparent in the way that we do that. We're just working through the right governance and to give that confidence to the people that rely upon it. So we don't like sharing our data as an industry, but also as well, I think, and to be semi-critical, probably of government policy in the past, we targeted the wrong sectors. Every single time we picked the housing sector, which is the hardest sector to crack. And you know, in the past, you know, government policy has been to put money in capability, but not make a commitment to a demand. And so effectively, you know, good taxpayers' money went into developing capability. The demand wasn't there because it wasn't like, for example, the government committed to an affordable homes program and became their own developer to provide one solution. And effectively then you ended up backing, or the UK PLC backed MMC solutions that weren't able to pivot. You can't really pivot a volumetric modular factory to go and produce another product in the same way that you can a panelised. A panel is a panel is a panel. It goes in the school, goes in the house, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's a complicated subject.
Very much so. Back on the point of productivity, I mean, it's a passion of mine. I spend most of my life inside factories looking at productivity improvements, continuous improvement. We're analysing, we're measuring, we're capturing data. We're putting in changes and then we're measuring again to see if it's getting better. One of the challenges we have is agreeing what the metric is. You know, productivity, whether you measure it in terms of value add or output per pound or output per hour or whatever. So very noble thing that you're doing in terms of putting your data into the public domain in the future. And I think it's a great aspiration to become the most productive contractor in the UK in the next 5 years. How are you going to measure it and how are we going to consistently compare you with your peers?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So the report, it looks at kind of three measures of productivity. So the first one is gross value add per worker per hour, effectively. The second one is gross contribution per worker per hour. So you can be productive, but not profitable. And then you don't have a business. So and then the last one then is tracking margin erosion versus when you bid, you know, and part of that is making sure that the plans and the strategies that you put in place at bid stage you adhere to. You know, too often I see this across the industry. There's a whole load of work that goes in at bid stage to set a strategy, and then teams change, and then all the governance and the goodwill goes out of the way. So, I mean, interestingly, you'll see it in the report when it's published, but we didn't actually find any direct correlation between the GVA measure and the gross contribution. So, you know, at times projects can look productive, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they are as efficient as they could be, you know.
Okay, that's an interesting move. I admire you. Commitment to that, because I think productivity and, shall we say, the nemesis of the construction industry is productivity. You know, not only have we flatlined for 20 plus years, we've actually, in most recent figures I've seen, we've actually gone backwards in 20 years, you know, versus other more mature industrialized sectors, whether it's automotive, aerospace, or whatever, however you measure it, who have all made significant gains in that period. So clearly there must be an endemic, either a cultural thing or a technological thing, or I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah.
Our sector's got a problem with productivity, hasn't it? Full stop.
Yeah, and I wrestle with this from different perspectives all the time. You know, on one hand, I kind of think, well, do we need the external stimulus as an industry? You know, do we need the government to keep putting their hand in their pocket to force us to do it? Or do we just need a bit of Darwinism that it will rise? But the problem is that, you know, when you compare the productivity of all major contractors at the moment, it's probably fairly similar. And so there isn't necessarily a market disruptor. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, Mace Construct wants to do moving forwards is to put that market disruption in to do that. Now, if we're going to hang out on that, going back to the previous question, we obviously need to make sure that, you know, we're transparent in our reporting and in a way that people can rely upon the figures. So we're just going through that process at the moment to find the right third-party assurance to put their stamp on the figures, similar to what we do from a carbon perspective as well. We need to disrupt ourselves. And I think the other thing is as well that we, and I talk about this all the time, you know, we talked about it at the Industrialised Construction Conference, is that, you know, I think also we only focus too much on one piece of the puzzle. And that piece of the puzzle is like, okay, well, if we use off-site manufacture and if we drive PMV, we'll be quicker on site and therefore happy days. And that's great, and no one would argue against that. But for me, the equal prize is the pre-construction period, which is where I come in from a design perspective. And like I said, even though we don't design in-house and we use third parties, every single week that we save in pre-construction is equivalent to a week earlier on site. So, i.e. the asset gets handed over to the client and they can start generating an income. Those 2 weeks are worth exactly the same. They might not say the prelims that it would do, but I think we need to target everything. We need to target faster delivery times. We need to target faster pre-construction programs as well. And we can do that through standardised components, through pre-agreement with supply chain for rates, so we don't have to reprice the thing every single time.
And I think the more you move down from construction to production, the more easier it will be to measure that productivity as well, because anything that's measured in the manufacturing environment is much more visible and controllable and measurable than it is on a construction site.
Exactly. I mean, we're big on planning and production control, very big on it. Historically, we've been very big on it during the delivery, the manufacturing stage. We're now driving that through to the design stage as well, and actually to looking at volume pieces. And just certainty of delivery outcome from a design perspective. The equivalent of tack time for design, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You're talking my language.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the conference, Industrialised Construction Conference. I was in the audience for that. Great presentation. You titled it Designing for Production, Embedding Industrialised Thinking from Concept to Delivery. So that was your kind of mantra for the day. So my question is, how do we embed industrialized thinking from concept to delivery? You know, you've got to start with it, you know, really early on. It's a cultural thing, isn't it? So how do you convince your client and their team and that novated architect that your vision of this delivery that you've got is the right way to go? How do you embed it in that team?
I think that for a start, I think we're seeing more and more clients coming to us with that desire, you know. So they're desirous of that outcome. And I think that's where we can provide the value to draw upon the experience that we've got to help them navigate through those waters. And it's, you know, every contractor is going to say the same thing, isn't it? But the earlier that we can get involved, the earlier we can influence it before too many dies are cast in the stone. Then it is things like, well, can we provide the tools to the client and to the design team where we don't have to reinvent the wheel? So we do, like I say, through our C2P library, where we do have a reliable source of a reliable data set across historical projects where we can prove the value of each solution and we can prove that it works against a specific asset type of building. And that way, we don't have to go through business cases every single time because we've done it. We've done it at a holistic level. Then it's like, well, then can we, through our supply chain, if we've got libraries of digital components or sub-assemblies, like Revit models, can they be free issued to consultants? That saves the design period. Then you can work it through. Can you put a digital ecosystem in place? Because it's the sprints between the work. It's not the work, is it? It's the sprints between the work. And, you know, the answer isn't, from a digital point of view, my view is the answer isn't one single piece of software. It is a connected ecosystem of various off-the-shelf pieces of software. We're not going to go and create an equivalent to Revit, you know, but we don't need to. But it's that connectivity that speeds up the baton changes and ultimately drives the value.
And clearly, we may come back to it later, this is where AI could be transformational, isn't it, in connecting all of those sub-elements of that ecosystem together.
Yeah, and this is interesting. So, I mean, again, from a I'm a big proponent of generative AI, you know, not just in construction. You know, I have a side hustle on music as well, and I use generative AI for certain things on that. But obviously, going back to it, we don't design. So generative AI, we can be exponents of it, and we can promote it to our consultants. But ultimately, it sits with them to take up. I think there's a lot of potential for us for AI-related technical checking. Obviously, every time a drawing comes in, It would be nice to assume it's 100% right, but we still have to do our due diligence, so we still check it against all the regulations. And if you think about it, they're just things that could be scripted. And so ultimately, if we can script or use AI to with checks and balances to do that, again, it speeds that process up. So I can imagine a workflow where every time we use Aconex as a common data environment, that every time a consultant drawing is uploaded to Aconex, it is automatically in the background reviewed from a technical compliance perspective through AI, a report generated, and then a human factor then comes in to give it a double check and make sure there's no hallucinations or anything. One of the things that was just a throwaway comment from me at the conference, I think we all latched onto, you know, it's one of these spitball comments that comes out of your mouth before you think, was about, well, actually, if you talk about generative AI, does AI care whether or not you're using standardized components or not? And it was just a verbal shot out thinking aloud. And then the more I think about it, the more I think, well, it doesn't. My thought process 2 years ago would have been, well, if we standardize and pre-author everything, we'll use the AI to weld it together. So we'll design all the standard spaces, whether it's in a hospital or a school, and then we'll use AI to knit it together and to create the corridors and the things that are non-static, so dynamic components. Now I kind of think, well, by the time we've done that, AI probably doesn't care because it's just about volume of work. And actually, if you give the AI enough bandwidth, all you've got to do is give it a brief and it'll come through. So that becomes really interesting, scary, but interesting as well.
But it takes us into a world of configurable products, you know, and configuration tools and, you know, dynamic design, doesn't it? You know, you can do 100 iterations of a certain building model in not quite seconds, but you know what I mean, with the right processing power.
Yeah.
You know, the power of it is phenomenal, isn't it? It's almost mind-blowing.
And it's just how you keep your discipline with that. It's a bit like, you know, so I'm a musician in my spare time. I've got a home studio. Because I'm not paying for a studio by the hour, I can fiddle about to my heart's content. Yeah, so you kind of need a bit of self-imposed constraint and discipline that if you can iterate forever using AI, you still need to draw a line down at some point in time as well. So there's always going to be the human factor that needs to take the ultimate decision.
And in terms of your client engagement, just coming back to that client and procurement models and rewarding the right outcomes, because ultimately it's about outcomes, isn't it? It's about the building that client gets. A client's wanting to be involved in this exciting new AI generative design future, or do they just say, give me the building in the most efficient way?
I think it varies. I think there's some clients that want to be on the bleeding edge. I think most clients probably want to be a close second, and I think that's probably a safe space to be. But ultimately, I think we get so enamoured with how we deliver something. You know, when I go to use a car analogy, when I go to buy my car, I don't really care how Ford or Mercedes or BMW built it. That's their problem, isn't it? I just want to pick the keys up and know about features and benefits and that it's going to turn up when it says it's going to turn up and it's going to cost the price that I've got quoted in the showroom. It's not a lot to ask. So I think we can get really self-absorbed in the process of how we deliver a product. You know, I know you had Matt Randall from Mason in the last season of this. And I was on a call with Matt, and another throwaway line kind of come out with is not to contradict everything that we're doing within Mason productivity, but being productive isn't a guarantee of a good product. You can be really productive, but deliver a product that isn't very great.
Yeah.
So it's equally important, alongside our drive, what will be our public drive to be the most productive contractor, is to make sure that the end product that we give is as great as it possibly can be and as good as our clients demand and deserve,
So let's move on to the challenges of low carbon delivery with industrialization. So obviously we're looking at some R&D that you've done around low carbon cassettes and various other low embodied carbon solutions. That goes further on. It goes into circularity, goes into design for deconstruction. There's a whole raft of things that the sustainability angle teaches us. Do you think with an industrialised construction approach, we can deliver better performing, lower carbon, better future-proof products that are, I mean, by products, I mean buildings, that, in the future can be reconfigured, deconstructed, relocated even?
Yeah, I think we can do it now. So as an example, we delivered a large student accommodation project directly opposite Battersea Dog and Cats Home for Urban Est, which was passive house. It's probably the UK's biggest passive house. And, I'm a massive proponent of passive house as a standard as a really robust, reliable standard for delivering low carbon. And that was delivered as an example. That was that not only did that, that's a really good example of our approach, actually, because not only did that deliver to a passive house standard, it delivered using our own low carbon cassette solution that we developed a couple of years previously. So it goes to show that you if you get the right solutions, there's no reason why offsite manufacturing, CTP, can't deliver low carbon. Most of the jobs that we do now, a lot of the, especially the commercial jobs that we do in London, are retrofit or have retrofit elements. And we're seeing more and more clients, pushing for circularity on our projects. So we've got, many jobs that we've, for example, reused steel, taken down the existing steel frame, repurposed it, put it back up again. Often cladding is repurposed, taken away, repurposed, and brought back. I don't see them as binary choices. I think if you find the right solution, you'll deliver something that meets circularity agendas, that meets low carbon, and that meets the industrialised construction that delivers the productivity.
Yeah, ticks all the boxes. And fundamentally, you're reducing waste, aren't you? You're taking waste out of the system with
exactly.
this approach. Let's face it.
And we can't afford waste. This is the thing that we don't have enough people in our industry. That is it. We've got loads of people leaving. We've got a big churn rate. And we, equally in a report, we find that where products churn, people, productivity goes down. It's an obvious statement again, but we've got the metrics to back that up as well. So anything that we can do to get waste out of the system is going to be beneficial to all.
And on the people point, I read an interesting, might be a few years old now, but I read an interesting MACE, another report that came out, which was MACE's Industry 4.0 Insights Report. And it actually highlighted in there a major future reskilling challenge for construction. So it was about, how do you actually define, in this new world that you're talking about, what the future workforce looks like? So in moving potentially your business model from client advisory to delivery side, clearly you're going to have to address some of those issues because the whole industry has got a workforce challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got two daughters, one's 22 and one's 16 going on 21. But the reality for those is that by the time they finish their careers, whatever careers they choose to do it, they probably will have gone through three or four jobs whose job titles don't even exist now. So everything in this world is changing and changing at a much faster pace. Do I believe that we need... So I think it is a combination approach that we need to... I think there will be new roles that emerge and they will be specialist roles. But equally, you can't be a lone voice in the wilderness. So if you really want to get back to, going back to the earlier point you were making about scaling things up, absorption, we've got to bring the masses up So we've got to, you know, we've got to educate, we've got to train, we've got to make everybody feel confident and competent in this arena to do that. And that's part of my role within Mace, and, you know, supported by others, is to make this stuff not scary, to make it exciting so people choose to do it rather than be told to do it.
And do you think there'll be more hybrid roles in the future because AI can enable, you know, you don't need a specialist skill set in terms of a designer, you don't necessarily even need to be an engineer. You just need to be a good integrator or information prompt, manager or something.
Just need to write a prompt, yeah. I think that's dangerous. Yeah, I mean, was it Larry Ellison said, you know, like AI won't take jobs away. Just people who can use AI will take the jobs from people who can't use AI. Yeah. And it's just, you know, we don't sit there on typewriter and type our letters up anymore, do we? It's just another tool, but you still have to have the knowledge. You still have to know what you're talking about to check the AI. Because as I say, it's a dangerous path to just rely on an automated output that could be right, but equally could be wrong. So we still need to upskill people to be able to do that.
And I think it's fairly obvious. We're going to need new personas. There will be new job roles. If you're going to move from construction to production, you're going to need design for production leads, platform integrators, which maybe, you know, isn't a job you could define today, but you probably will in the future. Digital production managers, manufacturing literate design managers that speak the language of the manufacturer. That's going to be a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you looked at headcount in the digital arena within Mace, you know, compared to 5 years ago, the amount of people that we have already operating and that supporting our projects has gone up dramatically, because that's where the need is. That's where it goes. Same with our design managers. I think, you know, we've got many of our project directors and supporting teams that feel comfortable in the new emerging arenas as well. But equally, there's people that we need to support on the journeys. It's a never-ending thing. And unfortunately, you know, it's difficult to know when to commit, isn't it, to training or anything. Everything changes so quick that you could do something today and it'd be with the right intentions, and in 6 months' time, it's out of date. And so the rate of change is going ever quicker, but that doesn't mean you can't do it. You've still got to do it, haven't you? Because the temptation is that you wait and you say, well, we'll wait for it to calm down, but it isn't going to calm down. It's only going to get quicker. So I think the biggest skill for people is going to be for them to be flexible in their thinking and open to new ideas, and malleable is the wrong word, but adaptable is the word I was looking for. Yeah. People that feel comfortable with uncertainty.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's a more uncertain world yeah. now, isn't it? And that can feel deeply uncomfortable to people, but you almost have to kind of embrace the anxiousness and then go with it.
Yeah, and that comes down to corporate culture in many ways, doesn't it? Giving them the scope, the freedom, you know, to be able to make some errors or to have to change, you know, direction of travel and various things. It's a cultural thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And if you walk in Mace's, you know, walking at 155 Moorgate, Mace's HQ, and our vision is redefine the boundaries of our ambition. Well, you can't do that and feel comfortable at the same time. You have to kind of feel deeply uncomfortable, and if you don't feel uncomfortable, we're probably not redefining it to the degree to which we should be.
Yeah, it's a great analogy. So let's look to the future then. So what's the next evolution for Mace's construction to production strategy? You obviously had this strategy for some time. World's moving at a fast pace. We talked about what's influencing it. But what is the next evolution going to be shaped by? Is it going to be AI, or is it robotics? Is it automation? Is it humanoid technology? What is it? A mix of all those things, probably.
I'll buy a lottery ticket if I get the answer to this one right. But I think it's a combination of things. So I know that, you know, we're kind of longer term, we're looking into, you know, we will be looking into the potential for robotics on site, definitely. There's the whole digital integration piece is a huge thing. We've got a big initiative within Mace called Project Lift, which is about lifting the load and the burden on our people, automating what we can safely automate, integrating what we can do, reinforcing much of our reporting and our processes, so that we've got, whether you look at Project A, Project B, Project Z, we're reporting in a consistent digital manner, which means that we can then slice and dice our data. So things like our productivity report, we've got access to the data to be able to become a truly learning organisation. So every time you're learning from the one that before with reliance and robustness. You know, in terms of the MMC side of things, I think we're pretty mature in that space. And I don't necessarily see, I'm happy to be proven wrong, I don't necessarily see too many new technologies emerging. I think maybe some of the value from an innovative point is in the combination of existing technologies. You know, like I said, we go across 1 to 7 of the definition framework. And actually, a lot of the value is when we put that together with that and we deliver it with, you know, most of our jobs will have multiple MMC solutions on it in combination. And that's where we drive the value. The interesting part of the data will tell me what combinations make the most difference. Because unless you capture the data, it's very difficult to know which combination or which couple did make the difference if you do a lot. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, it's exciting times.
Good. Well, time flies. I look forward to reading the Build Smart, Build Better report in the next couple of weeks. Thank you, Tim, for your time.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Industrialized Podcast. This podcast was produced by Radar Media. The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Radar Media. For more information, head to www.industrializedconstruction.co.uk.